Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. By the time late November hits, many folks who have younger children have something else, a collection of crayoned or painted pictures about summer vacation, miscellaneous fall-themed paper crafts, and maybe a flyer about a winter concert featuring tuneful songs and dance presented in the grade school cafeteria. These examples of student-made art, learned or created in school, may seem like a given in early childhood and elementary education. But access to arts education over the past three decades has been on the decline, according to a 2021 National Endowment for the Arts report. The COVID-19 pandemic brought about real changes and challenges to investment in arts education as well. Phyllis Paisley is Executive Director at Missouri Alliance for Arts Education, and Colleen Fitzsimmons-Wiviot is the founder of Start With Art. They join us now to talk about ways that investing in arts education benefits students both in the classroom and out in the world. Colleen and Phyllis, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you.
We're glad to be here. Great to be here.
So Phyllis, I'd like to start with you. What is arts education, and how does it compare with the description in the introduction?
I think it compares favorably with the description in the introduction. When we talk about arts education at the Missouri Alliance for Arts Education, it encompasses both music, visual art, theater, and dance. We are also working to increase our support for media arts, because that is one of the fine arts listed under the Missouri Learning Standards for Fine Arts.
And what is media arts?
Media arts is actually a combination of both visual art content and many times involves performing arts as well, and then usually also technological aspects of recording, media of audio recordings, video recordings, that sort of thing.
Sure. Now, Colleen, as an educator who works with littles, what forms does arts ed take?
You know, I think there's a common misconception that students at a very young age can't participate in some of the art mediums that we see in the middle and high school grades. And I always love to push back on that. You know, with students that I work with who are as young as 3, 4, and 5 years old, we're doing art mediums such as printmaking and sculpture with clay. We're working with found materials. We're working with natural materials. We're using all different kinds of paint. And so I think, you know, students at a young age, they are artists and they can use those disciplines just as any other artist would. And so that's a big part of my work is to make sure that they are using tools as artists.
Right. What benefits does that accrue to children?
Absolutely. So in the young years, we know from studies that creating art at a young age helps with neural development. It helps with gross and fine motor skills. It helps with critical thinking and problem solving. And all that work is happening in the art room and in those preschool classrooms. It might look like a student cutting. It might look like a student dabbing paint on a piece of paper. It might look like them smushing clay. But all those synapses and they're firing in their brains and they're making connections. And they're also tapping into a lot of other kinds of learning, learning with science and technology. They're learning literacy skills. And so I think there's so much happening in the art room that I know art educators would love for the general public to know that it's not just smushing clay. There's a lot more happening there.
It's more than finger paint.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Phyllis, you're coming from 30 plus years of being an art teacher before taking on this role with an organization that's looking at art sort of at the state level. Now, from your experience, is arts education, I mean, is it arguably more important maybe in middle through high school? And what are the benefits that having arts classes, what do they do for students who are developing academically and intellectually sort of at a different level or in different ways than small children are?
Such a great question. I think that the arts provide so many benefits in arts education. I wanted to clarify, my background is in music education, and I was privileged to be in that position for over 30 years. But the students benefit by gaining in confidence, in experience, in collaboration, in cooperation, in problem solving, critical thinking. And it all happens, as Colleen said just a moment ago, within the arts setting. Mm-hmm. They are solving problems related to physics when they're working with that clay. Mm-hmm. If they squeeze it too skinny, it's not going to stand up straight.
Right, right.
And that hands-on experience is critical for young learners. And then it does carry forward into secondary and post-secondary education and lifelong learning in the arts.
Right. Well, and with music in particular, what is it that music education does for a person who is growing and learning not only how to think and to perform tasks that have to do with school, but outside?
I think many music educators, particularly those at the elementary level, are privileged to bear witness to their students growing in their skills and their confidence level. I remember when my kiddos were, I would always do a kindergarten show because my school was a K-5 configuration. Mm-hmm. And that first moment of standing in front of an audience for the first time, but they knew their stuff and they knew their friends were going to be with them. They felt part of something larger than themselves. Mm-hmm. They were doing something that they were ultimately proud of. And one of the things that is invisible that happens both in all arts education is the work that goes on before the show. Because they're there when, oh, we didn't get to this place in time. Oh, if you have to go pick up your tambourine, it's going to take this long to get there, so you'll have to leave at this time. Mm-hmm. And that's mathematics, that's spatial awareness, that is timing, and that is giving them a place to fail and then succeed along with others in their group.
Mm-hmm. So with all of these benefits that you're talking about, Phyllis and Colleen, why is it that arts programming is so vulnerable to cuts, Phyllis?
Arts programs are often marginalized when they're looking at prioritization. There are so many demands made on our schools across the board, and decision makers have very, very difficult decisions to make when they're allocating their resources. Mm-hmm. Some of the funding does come from federal sources, some comes from state sources, but in many cases, a large part comes from the local resources. And if there's only so many dollars to go around and you have to choose, is everybody getting a lunch or is everybody going to get their transportation services covered?
Right.
They're going to make difficult decisions, and sometimes the arts is one of the places that are looked toward. Mm-hmm. Another thing that is making it easier is some changes in funding for higher education and the availability of teachers to fill roles. Mm-hmm. Some of my colleagues at the state level have been sharing, they'll get phone calls from districts saying, well, since we couldn't find a music teacher, is it okay if we just don't offer music and we just offer visual art? We're still doing a little bit in the arts, and maybe we'll have a STEM teacher instead, or we'll allocate the resources in a different direction. And that always makes us very nervous because we want all students to have those opportunities and access to arts education.
Colleen, you are nodding. You know, with Start With Art and the people who have come to you in order to provide their kids with arts education, I mean, what are they telling you about why they're coming to you? And does it have anything to do with the kinds of cuts Phyllis has talked about happening sort of at a district level?
Sure. Absolutely. I think so. You know, I'm fortunate that I get to work with a lot of different institutions and I meet lots of different kinds of families in St. Louis. And, you know, this is a very informed generation of parents and caregivers. Parents and caregivers know that the arts are important for their children's development, for their well-being, for their confidence building, and they want to seek out those opportunities. So if they aren't available at their school, even at their daycare, or at their community center, they're looking for opportunities elsewhere. Of course, that comes with a lot of privilege to be able to seek out those opportunities and to be able to pay for them. But I think parents and caregivers are, they're looking for those opportunities. And that's where I see them. I see them in the museum. I see them at, you know, other community centers that I work with. I see them at, I have a partnership with New City School in St. Louis. And, you know, they're looking for those moments of connection for their students. And unfortunately, if they can't find it at their school, there are wonderful arts organizations here in St. Louis that are also doing that work.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Colleen Fitzsimmons-Wiviat, early childhood arts educator and founder of Start With Art, and with Phyllis Paisley. Phyllis is the executive director at Missouri Alliance for Arts Education, and we're discussing the trend, the long-time trend, in disinvestment in arts ed. Phyllis, when we are thinking about these community organizations, the ones that Colleen has just mentioned, specific to the St. Louis area, that is not going to be available everywhere throughout the state. We are just one place. Where have there been specific cuts, like in specific regions, and ones that you've seen happen that have maybe a long tail where it's really hard to get things started again?
It's something that we address on a regular basis, and we're so excited to have a new tool that is called the Arts Education Data Project. This is a project that is actually nationwide. Several states have chosen to be a part of that. And they're collecting data that shows enrollment trends in those five areas of arts education. And we have data now that is just for grades 9 through 12. Uh-huh. We are hoping to expand that to include K through 8 data soon. Mm-hmm. We're partnering with the Missouri Arts Council and the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education to get that information. So we can now even pinpoint on the map where there are arts deserts, where there are places where there can show trends over time what the enrollment numbers have looked like. Mm-hmm. So with this data, which just came online this fall for us, we are looking forward to really having that inform our entities like the Missouri Arts Council and like other not-for-profit organizations to how can their outreach extend into those areas where there is an arts desert, if you will.
Where are some of these deserts specifically?
You'll find when you access the map, you see some up in the northwest and northeast corner of our state and a little bit in southeast. We're fortunate that there are some pockets in the middle of the rural communities in the center of the state of Missouri that have less enrollment or fewer opportunities. Mm-hmm. But we're very fortunate in Missouri that there are a large number in our public, this is reporting public school and LEAs, local education agencies.
Right. So the pandemic, we mentioned in the introduction, it affected very many things, and arts education was one of those. And during the pandemic, Colleen, you actually were part of an arts education portion of something that was produced by 9PBS, which was called Teaching in Room 9. And that programming essentially was meant to help families, like give them something that their kids could be watching and learning from and with while they could not be in class.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you heard from families about what your lessons provided during that period that their kids, even if they were going to school, like that they just couldn't access?
Sure. Yeah. So my lessons on 9PBS were a partnership with the St. Louis Art Museum, and the lessons were geared towards early childhood, but certainly early elementary students as well. And I think what was so special about those was we were using art materials that most people already have in their homes. You know, anytime I started a lesson, I always said the best materials to use are the ones you already have. And that's something that classroom teachers are doing all the time. Despite what kind of budgets they have in their rooms, they're using what they have. And I think that's a great sentiment for arts education because there's so much critical thinking and problem solving that happens when you say, I only have this recycled cardboard. I only have these crayons. I only have some flour and some food coloring. Could I make some paint? Could I make a sculpture with this? Could I do a collage? And so I think that when I heard from families during that time is they really appreciated taking a lens and looking at the things they already owned and how can I use this to create something?
Right.
How can I make something beautiful out of this? You know, how can I engage my child to think about those materials in a different way? And that's where that really special critical thinking and problem solving is happening. So I found that was a really special part of a bright spot out of that really dark time, was hopefully getting people to think differently about tools and materials and what you can do and what you can learn from them.
So not just nine, but PBS has an education mission. But in order to put together content like that, there has to be money. Phyllis, how is it that the pandemic affected funding for arts education kind of broadly in Missouri?
Big question. When the pandemic hit, I'll just give an example from a theater program at secondary level. They had already committed to paying the rights and royalty fees to do a certain play or a certain musical. Those were not refunded. The thought was that they would recoup some of those expenditures through ticket sales. Ticket sales didn't happen.
Right.
So it put many programs at a deficit before before they could even move forward. Not to mention the fact that typically, in a program like that, the funding at the local level is very limited. So teachers, in addition to wearing so many hats and trying to so diligently meet the learning needs of their students, are also fundraisers. They're running out getting local business sponsorships. They are selling candy or cheese and sausage or wrapping paper or whatever it would happen to be to try to supplement their budgets so that they can bring the greatest kind of programming to their students.
And there is a challenge also with arts educators themselves, right? Like the numbers of educators who are out there and ones that are coming up in the pipeline?
Yes. Yes, it's something we're very, very concerned about because a lot of people have an experience with education, and so they think they know what teaching is. Most of the stories that are being told about education right now are not very encouraging people to join the profession.
Right, right.
Whether that is the status of teacher pay or working conditions. Teachers are service-oriented folks who are totally committed to ensuring their students receive all the skills and knowledge to be successful human beings. And one of the things that I was thinking about when Colleen was talking is the arts also bring that human element. They allow that individual maker of art or purveyor of art or even if they're curating. One of the greatest pandemic lessons that I saw was find 10 objects in your home and curate them.
And then
be able to tell your story. Why did you choose these objects? Why did you place them where you did? And not only is that career education for people that think only arts education is involving the painting of a something or the making of a something or the singing of a something, that it is actually, okay, a producer who is handling all of the details to make sure that things run smoothly.
Right, right.
So I'm not sure
together.
If I answered your question,
no,
did
that
I?
No, does answer the question. Is there a distinction, Phyllis, that you think needs to be made between funding and investment? Are they the same thing?
I think that funding deals specifically with dollars and investment deals with more than dollars. And I think it was a study from the Academy of Arts and Sciences that supported 88% of people surveyed believe the arts are important.
Yes.
But the funding that is allocated doesn't reflect that same sort of passion. You talk to any decision maker and they're going to be able to tell even their own story of how the arts made an impact on their life. How I was in band and I did this and I learned this and I experienced this and I wouldn't have gotten it any other way or name any other art similarly. Yeah. And so there is an investment that we can all make I think, in finding those opportunities to celebrate arts and what you gained from arts education, and then letting your voice be heard to those decision makers so that instead of $0, there might be in the next fiscal year, you know, $1,000 or $5,000 to be allocated. So they're similar, they're related, but not exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. Phyllis Paisley is Executive Director at Missouri Alliance for Arts Education, and Colleen Fitzsimmons-Wiviet is an early childhood arts educator and founder of Start With Art. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Jada Jones, with podcast design by Emily Woodbury and audio engineering by our executive producer, Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.